Welcome, you wonderful, purposeful, and beautiful humans, to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins. Hope Still Wins is a place where we get to know thought leaders from diverse backgrounds and differing worldviews to help us feel less alone, more connected, and move us to become a better world together. Each week, I'll be interviewing inspiring and relatable guests in attempts to get to know their hearts, celebrate their stories, and explore the concept of hope to hear how and if it has played a role in their lives. Ultimately, answering the question, does hope still win? If so, why? And if not, why not? This week, I get the honor of sitting down with the wildly creative, adventure lifestyle photographer and author, Ben Moon. Ben's story of being diagnosed with colon cancer in his 20s inspired him to shift his artistic focus from capturing the pursuit of adventure to telling nuanced human stories that have inspired and impacted millions worldwide. Most notably, he told his own story about his journey with colon cancer and his special relationship with his dog, Denali, in a short film which we have linked in the show notes. And let me tell you this, I highly recommend it, but bring some tissues. It only takes a few minutes. Ben is also an author and recently released his first book, Denali, A Man, a Dog, and the Friendship of a Lifetime. In this episode with Ben, I talk about a few things, and here they are. How dogs, or animals in general, can crack us open, literally opening up the hearts of all of us to help us see a deeper and different world amongst us. It's interesting because in the video that I, again, hope you watch, you'll see how Denali stood by Ben's side, but also how Ben stood by Denali's side through their struggles and through the aging process. We also speak about when our knowns in life are stripped away, when the things that we expect, when the things that we think are going to happen no longer happen. What do we do and where do we turn? The magic that is available to us in life's in-between moments, those moments that seem empty, those moments that don't feel like much is happening. What are we learning? What are we grasping? What are we seeing? What are we celebrating in those moments? Also, the beauty of choosing to show up as the unpolished version of ourselves. And finally, how sharing our stories is a way of giving hope to others. This week, we're going to do things a little differently. Instead of a weekly question, we want you to share and tell a piece of your story in hopes it gives something inspirational to others, hope-filled to others, maybe truth-filled to others, or possibly just gives a good laugh to others. Share it with the Hope Still Wins community. You can find us on Instagram. Please, please write us at Hope Still Wins in the comments, or you can just direct message us. We read them both. We're excited to hear more about your stories, and we can't wait to share a few in the future episodes, if you're willing. Many of you sent in responses to the question proposed in episode 3 with Amanda Klutz. What a great episode that was, right? And today I'm going to share one that I hope will spark something in all of you. I know it did for me. As a reminder, the question was, where did you find hope in the midst of 2020? What were your, as Amanda puts it, silver linings? Noah shared this, and it's amazing. Noah shared, I'm excited to share with you all today, he said, silver linings. A friend mentor of mine rephrased silver linings as God's severe mercy. It hurts, but in the long run, it is good. He said this to me after learning of my called-off engagement. And the silver lining of it all was that we weren't married. And although it is tough, the most challenging times that we walk through are redeemed by God. We may not know it when or how, but He has the power to redeem. He gives us hope, and that's why hope absolutely still wins. I've already seen it win again and again. Not that there isn't grief with the hope, but ultimately, we must magnify God rather than the situation because God is with us through it all. He knows about our struggles and He hasn't left. God's brought a new depth into my life throughout the season. Depth to better connect to myself, others, and ultimately Him. And that is the greatest silver lining of them all. Well, Noah, thank you so much for sharing. As you can imagine, I can relate with this story in many ways. And I think many out there can as well. It's interesting to look at our lives and see the moments that we feel that will be the most traumatic. The moments that we feel there's no way up. The moments that hurt the most. The moments of severe loss or disappointment or changes. And yet, I believe this. It's happened in my life. Years later, I can look back on those moments and see the good in them. I can see where it went through. How I guess not what we went through, but where I went through with God. It's incredible, actually. As I sit here right now, I'm thinking about all the things in my life where I felt hopeless, where I felt like there was no way to turn. And yet, today I sit, talking with all of you, sharing in these stories, and getting to interview incredible people, and in a loving relationship with a beautiful fiance who loves me dearly. It has been redeemed. And Noah, I am so thankful that you're seeing that as well. Well, all right. The time is here. Let's jump into my conversation, our conversation with Ben. Ben Moon, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Ben Higgins. Double Ben's are always confusing.
Yeah, this is going to be weird. I'm going to be saying my name multiple times. Hopefully we don't interrupt each other or that anybody thinks I'm talking to third person, because nothing's worse than that, right? Ben, I really am pumped to have you on the podcast, and there's a couple reasons why. One, I feel like your experience as a human is unique in the sense that, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but it feels like you're grasping to get the most out of life at every moment, and not everyone can say that, including myself.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, part of that comes from, you know, I think anytime you've faced mortality with, you know, a life-threatening illness like cancer, it sort of gives you a new perspective on life. And honestly, you know, this past year, I think, has given a lot of people that time to pause and reflect and see what's really important in life. But I feel like when everything you've known is suddenly ripped away, you know, being an athlete and being everything I knew as being a rock climber and a surfer and, you know, adventure photographer, suddenly, you know, got diagnosed with colon cancer at age 29. I mean, I didn't know. Suddenly all the things that I looked towards and looked forward to were gone. You know, I didn't have that. And so when I finally survived all that, you know, it gave me a new perspective on not taking things for granted, and also just what's important to me, you know, friendships, connections, you know, my dog.
Well, as I mentioned when we introduced you, you've consistently through life been able to be a great storyteller. And even before your diagnosis, you were a storyteller. You were capturing moments and you were telling moments. I think for a lot of people listening, including myself, do you mind if we dig in a bit to that moment where, one, you were diagnosed, but then once it hit you, and everything began to change in your life, how did that feel as a human?
You know, I think we all kind of grasp for that semblance of that we're in control somehow. And I think when you get a diagnosis like cancer, the first feeling is denial. You know, it's hard to wrap your head around that. But when it kind of puts you in the moment too, because you're just reacting at that point and trying to figure out how to stay alive. And, you know, and I really appreciate, you know, the name of your podcast, Hope Still Wins. I mean, hope is what kept me alive and kept me going, because there's no way you have two choices when you're faced with a diagnosis like cancer, either give in or you fight, you know. And the only thing that can keep you going through the treatments and things like that are incredibly demoralizing, and, you know, you're kind of beaten to a pulp and said to stay alive, you know, but just by the chemicals and the radiation and everything. And so you have to kind of find some glimmer of hope or something that motivates you and some reason to stay alive. And, you know, for me, it was just my friendships and connections and, you know, having my dog at my side. But the feeling is, it's a feeling of you're suddenly lost, you know? And I feel like this past, a year ago when, you know, this pandemic first hit, I felt that similar feeling of like, suddenly all that semblance of control was gone. And I didn't know what the future would bring because, you know, I had all this, my book tour ground to a halt and all these jobs were lined up, all these speaking gigs, and suddenly it was all gone. And I was just like, whoa. And just nobody knew what was really happening. And so it was a really confusing feeling. And it threw me back to, you know, I was diagnosed in 2004, and threw me back to that time, right into that moment of just not knowing what was next.
You mentioned a second ago, and it's something that's said often. It's written about in books often. We hear it in speeches often, to be grateful for every moment. But, you know, in a sense, with words, it sounds like a platitude. It just sounds like something that people say that makes sense and it's good on the ears, but it doesn't hit the heart. Can you dive into the details of what it means for you to be grateful for every moment? And as you process and walk through life on a daily basis, like, how can we make that an actual tangible statement instead of just something said and it comes in one ear and out the other?
You know, I mean, it's a constant struggle every day to stay present and appreciate that. But I firmly believe that if you can focus on when you wake up instead of all the things that are going wrong and all the things that, you know, that we might have, you know, first world problems, if we can focus on what we're grateful for and what we have, that's what keeps you alive, keeps you moving forward. And just focusing on the things that you appreciate and keeping that eye ahead. I mean, living in the moment is, you know, is a really challenging thing, and being grateful for each moment is a challenging thing. But, you know, I think focusing on the positives and what we do have, and it's not just, you know, that sounds also like a platitude, but there's, I heard someone say that, you know, just looking at one moment in the day where something good happened, where you had a human connection, where a stranger smiled at you or you smiled at a stranger and that made your day just a little better. Focusing on those little moments really can help bring us into the present and realize what we have to be grateful for. Cause so often we're just looking to the future, you know, having anxiety about the past or, you know, regret about the past or anxiety about the future. And it's trying to focus on what actually is good in life really helps ground us and, or ground me, I should say, and move forward.
We're going to talk about your dog and your relationship with your pup here in just a bit. And it's an incredible one. And as I said, again, at the beginning, if anybody's out there, I don't know one person. I passed the video along to as many text threads as I'm a part of before we got to talk. And the response is the same, right? It's a tearjerker, but there's a lesson involved in the video that I think everybody can relate with. But before we do, I want to try to ask a question here that will pull out something that is represented in your life. So as all this is going on, as you're diagnosed with cancer, as your dog is getting older, as your identity and how you saw yourself and kind of what your pursuits were are changing, it's a really difficult time, I'm sure. But coming out of it, what are the lessons that you've learned?
Prior to my diagnosis, and, you know, I was an event photographer for companies like Patagonia and, you know, chasing athletes around the world and, you know, always kind of focusing on finding those newsworthy stories, those peak moments, and, you know, kind of the, for lack of a better word, like the Red Bull, you know, the all the things that were something that would be worth photographing. And even before I was diagnosed, I started realizing how futile that was. There was just always something bigger, something greater. And I started realizing the moments in between, you know, were where the magic happened. The downtime, you know, getting ready for a climb. You know, I lived in my van for 3.5 years while I was getting my career started and, you know, traveled around the West, and it, you know, years before van life was a thing. And it, you know, I realized, and a lot of the photographs that Patagonia published were the ones that were just the moments in, you know, where you're just living your life and being present and truly immersing yourself in wherever you were. You know, there's days of waiting for good weather or, you know, making food or whatever. And But after diagnosis, I really stopped caring as much about athletic achievement and in the actual, you know, literal term. You know, I'm athletic achievement is so impressive, but I stopped chasing that as much and started caring a lot more about human connection and portraiture and who people were and my storytelling got shifted from, oh, here's the peak moments to here's the real shit in life. You know, that's what's actually happening. And the stuff that actually makes us tick, that connects us to and makes us want to go on.
In 2021, it's definitely okay to talk about our mental health and happiness. Humans aren't meant to keep everything inside. It makes us sick. And therapy helps. That's why we've partnered with today's sponsor, BetterHelp. What is therapy exactly? Well, it's whatever you want it to be. Maybe you're not feeling motivated right now and would like some tools to help. Or maybe you're feeling insecure in relationships or at work. Not dealing with stress well? Whatever you need, don't be ashamed of normal human struggles and start feeling better because you deserve to be happy. And now, you don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you to help. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/hopestillwins. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/hopestillwins.
There's an author out there who I really enjoy, Wright Thompson. He writes a lot of sports articles, but most of his articles I enjoy reading because they aren't just sports articles. They dig a little deeper. And he talks a lot about expectation. And as you bring this up, it kind of is ringing in my ear. And I think you're a great person to talk to about it. The expectations that we set for ourselves, right? We have maybe a vacation coming up, or maybe we do have some sports achievement that we're working towards, like a championship and a trophy, or maybe let's move it to the career, right? We want to get the promotion and we're doing everything we can to do it. And in the midst of that, what Wright talks about is we're losing those small moments in between, because once we get to that peak, it's never enough. It never fulfills. And it oftentimes, if not all the time, disappoints in some way. I can imagine with you, maybe it's a photograph that you're capturing or a moment you're capturing, and once you get it, it's gone, you know, but the photograph stays, and that's the cool part, but it's gone. Can you talk a little bit about in your life what you've experienced when it comes to expectations and pursuits and things that you think will fulfill, yet they fall short? You did just a bit with the small moments, but what does fulfill in your life now?
I think it is becoming appreciative of the journey, you know, and that's I felt it a lot over the last few years. You know, with a photograph, you know, you have, you know, a lot that works up to, you know, a lot of planning. But personally, my own experience with photography, I try to set the setting. You know, I get the location, the you know, athlete or the people I'm working with, the characters I'm working with, and you know, the time of day or whatever. But I try not to be too scripted with what's going to happen. You know, a lot of people are like, I want this one move on a climb, or I want this one wave, or they have this expectation. And I love leaving it open for the magic in between. And, you know, and when I started shooting or directing short films and, you know, I tended to try to work with cinematographers and DPs that were open to that magic too. We didn't just have a shot list. We had all, you know, sometimes when you're shooting one direction, you'd look behind you and it's, it's going off and the light's perfect. There's something happening that's really, you know, really amazing. And I like to be able to pivot really quickly. And so I keep my crews really small, you know, even on commercial jobs, I try to keep my crews as tight as possible for the filmmaking. And so films, a lot of times you're like trying to get to that goal of you telling the story and, but the creating that and the edit and, you know, I like to sit in on edit the whole, as soon as the story's kind of structured, I like to sit in on that and just feel it evolve and unfold. And so I've started to really appreciate that. But moving even forward, that, you know, writing the book, you know, after the Denali film, you know, went crazy. It took 4 years to write the memoir, and it was a struggle because I'd never done storytelling in that form before. I'd written the paper and, you know, a few papers in college, and, you know, I'd written one article for a cancer magazine, but that's it. And so there's a lot of doubts and fears and anxieties, incredible anxiety about whether my story was worth telling and what the point of it all of it was. And, but I was living in my van again, not by, it was just kind of happenstance. I'd built out a newer van, and I was parking at the beach every day where we filmed Denali. And, you know, I was realizing in that process, I was just trying to get this book done. I just wanted to turn it in and be done with it. But then I realized every day I was parked at the beach, going for long walks with my dog, Nori, now, and going surfing. And I realized what the beauty that was in that, you know, I mean, I was parked at a beautiful beach and with my dog, and, you know, the van doors kicked open and just writing a book. And I was like, this sounds so romantic. And in the moment, it was hard to appreciate that. But afterwards, now looking back, I was like, wow, that was a really beautiful time, but it wasn't easy. It was painful. So you kind of have to like remind yourself, okay, what's happening right now? Not just this end goal of having that book on the shelves, but what's happening right now?
Because it's the question so many people ask, and it's one of the biggest reasons why Hope Still Wins even exists. But in the biggest moment there of you going, is my story worth telling? And the anxiety around that, you know, if you're writing a book or if you're just living life day to day, how did you decide finally that, yes, my story is worth telling? Like, my story does matter.
There were a lot of steps in that journey. But one of the biggest motivators really was, you know, obviously with the short film, I got thousands and thousands of messages from that and how it touched people. And I realized that there was it wasn't so much a story about Denali and I, there was something relatable in there and universal. And I knew that the only way that my story would be worth telling in the book form is if I was really vulnerable, because I knew that's the only reason that the film struck too. It's like, you have to be open. People right now, we're all so tired of the polished version of life, you know? So if you want that, just like look at Instagram every day, you know, it's everybody's putting their best foot forward. And I think it kind of leads to this, like, we're always feeling like we're not good enough. And I realized that I was going to have to tell the ugly parts too and really dive in there. And that was terrifying. But I also, I mean, from just the most basic level, I had made a post on Instagram where I revealed that I had a colostomy bag this whole time. And I expected just crickets, you know, I didn't think. And it was one of the most engaged. I mean, I had thousands and thousands of letters from that too, being like, thank you, I finally got my someone I care about to go in to see the doctor. And, you know, colon cancer is affecting younger and younger individuals. And I'd lost three friends under the age of 40 to colon cancer, one of them while I was writing the book. And I was like, if I could just help one person, save one life by writing this, then it's worth it. And if I could help one person who's struggling with getting through something really challenging by telling some of the tough stuff in the book, you know, the more ugly sides of life, then it'll be worth it. And so I just kept focusing on that. If I can just help one person, it'll be worth it. If I can help one person, and realizing that it wasn't so much about my own story, but focusing on the relatable themes and how, you know, we are as a interconnected, you know, humans, just, you know, that we all face struggles. And we all need a friend. And in the story, it was, you know, my dog Denali and the other friends I met along the way. And so, I really just had to hang on to that fragment of if I could help someone.
It is one thing that I've been able to learn through doing Hope Still Wins is, you know, we have incredible people like yourself on this show, and we hope it's a safe place for people to share their stories, because there's one thing I have yet to be convinced it's not true, that I went into this with an assumption, and my assumptions are typically wrong. But my assumption was that everybody's experienced pain and struggles, and that might be one thing that connects us the most, and that it actually could connect us in the most beautiful ways, especially when we start to recognize, speak to, and share those stories of pain and struggles, because there is people out there hurting right now. And your story has helped many. And I want to get into a bit about the story that, like I said, I shared to everybody I knew. It's a video you did with your dog, Denali. Why did you use your dog and that time period to create this video? And did you expect it to relate with so many in the way that it did? Again, if you haven't watched this video, I'm telling you right now to go watch it. Like, I don't care who you are. Like, I don't care where you're at. It's, what, 9 minutes long, 8 minutes long? Go watch it. Pause this now. Go watch it. Come back to this. But why did you use your dog and your relationship with your dog to tell this story?
You know, it wasn't planned to begin with. We were doing another little, a quick little video about my story for a client. And while we were starting that, one of my dear friends who filmed that film, he saw, you know, Denali was on his last, you know, he was in his last days, and it was, I recognized how much his friendship had meant to me. I mean, being with a friend for 14 and a half years, I mean, that's a long period of life. I mean, he walked me from my early mid 20s all the way to my late 30s. And that's a lot of living there and through a lot of things. And so when Skip said, hey, like, what if we kind of shifted the focus to you and your dog? And we didn't really have a plan. We just started filming and going to the places that I'd really enjoyed, you know, the place like Smith Rock where I'd climbed, and here on the Oregon coast where I live today. And just filmed that. And I had it's funny thing is I prior to us having this idea to start filming, Denali and I had told Denali, I was like, hey, I know you've seen me through so much. It's okay to go now. It's okay. And when Skip's like, hey, we should make this about you and your dog, I had another talk with Denali. I was like, hey, can you stick around for a few more weeks or for this month? Because it'd mean a lot to me if we could just do this. And he rallied, I mean, to the day, I mean, to the, like, literally to the hour, the end of the month, he started just letting go. And I mean, it's, you know, we're connected as humans, but I mean, our relationship with our dogs, especially if you spent that much time, are really powerful. And so I had to honor his friendship. And it wasn't an easy edit. It wasn't like we expected it to go viral. It took a year and a half to really get the tone right. And it was a lot of struggle. I just hung onto that thread of it has to be relatable, and hung onto this feeling in my heart that there's something in here I need to share. And so it shocked me when it, you know, had 8 million views in a week, but it was, you know, it was really powerful too, to see how it touched people.
What has been the most common takeaway from the people that watch?
You know, I had messages from people that are like, hey, I don't even have a dog. I've never had a dog, but there's something in it that, you know, made me feel like I could get through this. And we've all experienced loss. And a lot of it was just about, you know, it's funny how something, a lot of people are like, oh, this video was really sad. It's like, but there was a lot of hope in it. And I think that that's what it really, really brought, is that, you know, there was a lot of people ask me about when I wrote the book too. They're like, hey, this is going to be a sad story. You know, well, dogs have a lifespan that's shorter than ours. And so it's really challenging to know that, but there's a beauty in that too. And they can teach us a lot. And so I try to, in the book, to bring it a full circle and be like, hey, there's a lot of hope for moving forward in this as well. And so, yeah, the film touched people in different ways, but I think what it did is kind of crack people open. I feel like dogs can get to our hearts and touch on some themes that would otherwise be challenging, you know, and they, dogs allow us to just kind of let our guard down. And I think that that's what's beautiful about them.
The book is Denali, A Man, A Dog, and the Friendship of a Lifetime. It was done by Penguin Books. And if you can probably find it anywhere, I'm assuming, still, right? You can Google it and it will come up.
Yeah, and I read the, if you prefer audiobook too, I narrated the audiobook as well, which was its own challenge, but that was...
Oh, I will tell anybody, I just came out with my book in February, I will tell anybody that the audiobook was almost as hard as writing the book, and like how many times you mess up over your own words and you get frustrated and then you want to just like, yeah, it's a beast of a project.
You want to rewrite the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, it's yeah. I'm glad I did it. But really yeah. frustrated with the experience. Now, Ben, as we kind of close up here, there's a few themes I want to touch on. And, you know, you do have a new dog that you're sharing life with. You have made it through cancer. You are pursuing dreams and goals and hopes in the context of what you've learned before. For anybody wondering, like, you know, how is Ben Moon now? And what are you dreaming of now? And what does life look like now? How would you answer it?
I'm just really excited about telling stories, and I'm building a place in the Oregon coast right now. And, you know, with my dog here, my new dog, Nori, who's lived her whole life at the beach. And it's funny how dogs are mirrors of us. And so Denali was the mirror of who I was then. And Nori's a much more grounded version of Denali. Denali was a, you know, he was a, me in my 20s, you know, and that's such a, it's a really cool thing. But I also, I'm building this home on the coast to kind of have as a place to build community and creativity. And you have a lot of friends that are musicians and writers and photographers and filmmakers. And so just having a place that can be of a hub of that, because I've always dreamed of building that in a greater way. You know, and I lived in my van for, you know, 7 years of my life, and I'm ready to kind of share that space and lots of space for friends to camp here. But really, I'm just more excited about telling stories and, you know, making new connections and, you know, just talking to people like you. It's incredible to see how far and what storytelling can reach us, where that can take you.
We talk oftentimes on this podcast about stories and the power of stories and mostly the power of individuals' stories. You've, again, used your whole life to tell stories and do it in beautiful and relatable ways. When you go into telling a story and capturing a story, what elements of that story do you want to highlight? And then also on the back end of this question, why have you used your life to tell powerful stories?
You know, I'll make one reference to a film I made a few years ago with this conservationist who protects grizzly bears named Doug Peacock. It's called Grizzly Country. And, you know, he's a living legend in the 70s. And the whole time we were recording, he was, you know, he's been through a lot and he's seen a lot and he's seen the world change a lot and the effect we've had on the planet. And, you know, there was a little bit of, you know, guys that have fought to protect things their whole life. Kind of, there can be a little cynicism and just despair, you know, when you've seen, it's kind of fought a losing battle. And in all those interviews, I was like, hey, Doug, why you're having a granddaughter soon? Like what, how would you give her hope? And I kept coming back to that theme in the interviews, and it was incredible to see or just hear the responses. And some of the best lines came from that, you know, and one of my favorite lines he ends from that film was, he just said, arm yourself with friendship, you know, and just like, and when you're down, when you're depressed, you know, get outside. It's the best cure I know for the metaphysical icky poos. And just like, I mean, here's this guy that, you know, and so it's just, I was just trying to find something in that story that would help people connect. And, you know, and using my own story, I mean, I grew up a really, really shy kid, and, you know, having the spotlight in me has never been something I was used to. I mean, for 15 years of my photography career, you know, I was just a, you know, you're just the liner, you know, you're the credit in the margin, you know, and when social media came to be, it changed everything. And, you know, now with having, you know, that Denali film go viral and having a book out, and now the book being adapted into a feature film, it's kind of wild to just see where sharing your own story can take you, but being okay with sharing the whole story, not just the polished bits.
This week's episode of Hope Still Wins is brought to you by Generous International. Generous International is a company that I co-founded. Generous donates 100% of profits to nonprofits fighting human-facing injustice. So every bag of coffee bought, every cup of coffee drink is going back to make the world a better place. Generous is best known for selling coffee, specialty grade coffee. So it's some of the best coffee in the world. You're going to drink coffee anyways, and like we like to say, why not make it life-changing coffee? Well, you can visit Generous at generouscoffee.com. Please go out today and check out Generous Coffee.
Yes, your story is magnificent and it is unique because it is yours. But my story and your story aren't any grander than anybody out there listening. It's incredible when a human decides to share their story, the whole of it, and what comes from it, and who grabs onto it. And if we did Hope Still Wins for 20 years, Ben, and that's the takeaway, is that people say, just, I've learned that my story matters and that my story is unique and beautiful. Yet the person sitting next to me on the plane story is unique and beautiful. Also, like, that would be worth it for me. Like, this whole thing would be worth it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can't agree more with that. I think, you know, over and over and over in sharing my own story, I've had that fear. Like, is my story remarkable? Is my story worth telling? And recognizing that we all have a story to tell. And as a storyteller, I love just learning about other people's stories. And it's easy to just look at that surface level of what we think at first. And the magic for me is when you dive deeper and you learn, you know, in building my house, it's like the guy who's doing my tile, I, you know, he's become one of my closest friends, but he's like a legendary local surfer and, you know, just a really deep, deep human being. And when I first showed up, I was kind of terrified of him. He was kind of had that like edgy, crusty, you know, and once we broke through the layers, I was just like, wow, this guy, you know, we just never know who is going to be the person that's going to help us move to the next phase in our life or spark that, give that little spark that takes us somewhere we never expected we would be. And so I think being open, and especially in these polarized times, really being open to, you know, hearing the other side of the story and trying to get to know people we might not think we agree with and hearing how they tick. I think that's the key for us to exist as a culture right now and to thrive.
And to survive. And not only the human story, but as you've so beautifully presented, also the story of the pets and the animals and the partners and the friends that walk alongside of us. Ben, I'm going to ask the last question here. I really do appreciate your time and you being open and sharing your journey with us. You mentioned it in the video you did on grizzly bears, and you've seen now and you've gotten to hear what hope looks like to those who have fought so hard to preserve, yet it's getting ripped away from them. So you've gotten to see both sides and hear both sides, I'm sure. But I want to ask you the question and what you've gained and what you've learned from all of this. Ben, do you believe that hope still wins? If so, why? And if not, why not?
Yeah, I firmly believe that hope does still win. And, you know, the reason for that is it is that spark that keeps us going. And like I mentioned earlier, when you're faced with mortality and when, you know, you feel that loss of control and you don't really know what's next, I feel like hope is that kind of little fire that just keeps burning and keeps helping you put that, even when you don't feel like it, put that next foot forward. And, you know, during cancer treatments, when all you're looking at is the next, you're trying to just exist at sometimes, because it's really demoralizing. Hope was that little spark of, that kept me going. And I think that it's interesting too, because I wasn't able physically to do a lot of things that I wanted to do during that time. And I would just go sit at the base of the cliff and feel the sunshine on my face and hear my friends laughing and just hear the sounds of like carabiners clinking and like this, the familiar things. And just, it just gave me, it gave me a feeling of a grounded, you know, feeling grounded, but then also surfing, you know, I had no strength, but I would just paddle out and just be in the ocean and feel something far greater than myself and realize that life still goes on. And when the pandemic hit last year, when, you know, that first few weeks when we were all not sure what was going on and, you know, just life was kind of shut down all of a sudden, I'd walk across the street to the beach and realize that, that the ocean, the sea life and the birds and everything was still moving on. Like it didn't, you know, nature was still happening. And that was enough to give me hope. I would just watch the light and watch the birds and watch the waves. And I was like, wow, you know, in spite of this feeling of the world just stopped, things are still going on. And so I think getting outside and just remembering, you know, like connecting with our friends and reaching out and all those things, you know, can keep that hope fire still burning.
Ben Moon, you're somebody special. I appreciate you. Thank you for all the work that you're doing, all the work that I know you're going to continue to do. Thank you for sharing your story over and over again in the most beautiful ways and the stories of others. And thank you for coming on Hope Still Wins. It means a ton.
Thank you, Ben. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me. And yeah, thanks for all you've been doing and all you're doing and will continue to do. And so I appreciate this opportunity to share part of my story. So.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of Hope Still Wins. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this conversation, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple and join the community over on Instagram at Hope Still Wins. As a reminder, our ask for this week's conversation is a share and tell, a piece of your story. The team and I are excited to connect with you. We invite you to join us on Instagram to celebrate the stories of others in the Hope Still Wins community. Well, hey, that's it for today. So friends, have a great week. Find some hope. And well, look for those silver linings. Thank you again for tuning in to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins, and I'll see you next week.